Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. The LA Steel Show. And tonight, we're going to, again, try to conclude the Leaves of Moria's Garden and The Illumination, the second book. And we've covered quite a bit of ground. And for those of you who might be joining us and for the first time, it's very difficult to backtrack right at this moment to try and go back on this book, because I suggest you go to the other archive shows that we've done on this, and because it's a step by step work, and we kind of did it a little backwards when we began, and about a year ago now, I would say close to a year ago. We've done it probably a good 30 or 40 shows on this, maybe more. And we're now entering, and we're kind of repeating in a way, but we went back to the first books because we really didn't cover them. And that's the way this work is. It's kind of it being a mystical work. In an intuitive work as well. It's an intuitive work. It's intuitively dependent upon the interpretation is intuitively dependent. It's not a normal work of fiction or nonfiction. And as we enter it, as we get through so many of these works, we find how multidimensional it is. A multi-layered it is that I had a gentleman a while back call contact me, and he was actually on the show one evening when we discussed this, and he'd been studying this work for 40 years, and I can understand that because it's so very intriguing and so very involved. But at the same time, I don't intend to be studying it for 40 years. I may be referring to it, but for everyone who is interested, we've gone through most of the 13 books, and we're covering those that we did not or very lightly touched upon at the beginning of the series. And these are now the beginning books again, so you can enjoy that with us. And I'm going to start start the show tonight with the where we left off last week, which is in the Illumination and the Leaves of Moria's Garden. And it was, and of course, for those of you who aren't aware, you can join me on this journey by going to the Agni Yoga Society. I believe it's .org, but just put an Agni Yoga Society, and come to the book that we're reading now. And the first book was The Call, and the second book is Leaves of Moria's Garden. And we finished part, I believe it was part 7. Just going to double check here. I believe it is part 6 of the Illumination, and there are more parts to it, and I don't know how far we'll get tonight. I'm going to. Actually, I'm going to ask you to go to part 8 if you're following the text. If not, then I'll just read this. And it starts this way. The ray of Christ is just as scientific as the ray of the sun. But to the crowds, the simple finding of an object is in itself a miracle. Is the change of races a miracle? Is the coming of the teacher a miracle? Is the appearance of Christ a miracle? Does one prophesy a miracle centuries ahead? A miracle violates harmony, whereas cosmic events only affirm evolution. Dreams and visions also are not miracles, but a thread of life that is a knowledge of what is impending, revealed to such an extent as not to infringe upon karma. If people could without prejudice, accept dreams and consciousness, the path could be improved. The manifestation of new images is often distortedly reflected, and the mirror either expands or contracts as when a surface undulates from an unusual pressure. And one must cautiously, consider the so-called nightmares. Their meaning may be significant. And again, I believe I have to remind my listeners tonight that the ray of Christ, as what he's saying, is just as scientific as the ray of the sun. But to the crowds, the findings, the simple finding of the object is itself a miracle. In this text, Christ is the pagan significance of the meaning of the perfect individual, the perfect human being, which can be us, which is what we're supposed to achieve as people, as in our evolutionary advancement. And in our enlightenment, the enlightenment and the illumination of it, of our selves, will advance us to that Christhood, if you will, or that we are, that we can be, our potential that's within us. And what this is saying is, that dreams and even nightmares are threads of our consciousness, as well as threads that may be predicting or may be showing us our future. And once we, and I'm going to set apart this a little bit, go to the side a minute and refer to the 2012 concepts of co-creationism and the manifestation of self consciousness, if you will. What we're supposed to do, not everyone. I don't think everyone will do this or will get there, but. And I'm hoping that I can, and I'm hoping that many, many, many people can. But by that time, by the next 3 years, we are supposed to come into a planetary alignment. Never before has this happened. And it may have, thousands of years ago, but at this point, it never has. As far as mankind's aware of, it never has happened. And this is the first time that the whole world, the whole universe, essentially, the Earth, the Sun, and all of the planets will be aligned to the center of our solar system, and again to the center of the universe. And what that will do is create such a gravitational pull, such a gravitational direct pull, that it essentially pull us from ourselves, if that's if I'm reading, if I'm, I may, if that's the, if that's what'll happen. But there'll be a tremendous shake. There'll be a tremendous jolt. And at the same time, there are other prophecies, like for instance the Hopi prophecy, that predicts the blue star to emerge within the next year. Within the next 2 years, and will be visible in the sky. Will be coming toward our planet because it'll be coming into an orbit between our sun and our planet. And it's a much greater planet than our own. So you can just imagine what it will be when we see it. It'll be very visible to the eye, according to the Hopi prophecy. And it will be blue. They will turn the night sky blue from its vastness. And what that will do at a certain point, whether it's 2012 or whenever, it's going to separate and pull the certain people from the Earth, essentially, to that planet, and into that planet. But that planet is supposed to be in a perfect state, a perfect state where we will be in a perfect planet with perfect everything. We'll have evolved to a level of peace and love and brotherhood and all these marvelous things. And that is what the significance of this 2012 prophecy, not only by the Mayans, but by a number of people, a number of different indigenous cultures, have stated that that at that time we will end all space and time. There will no longer be a space and time as we know it. So, getting back to this work, this illumination, we're talking in this way. Everything that we see now as our dreams or as our sleeping consciousness, in a way, our subconscious, our unconsciousness, will start to merge forward, will start to come to the forefront of our reality. Those dreams will start to, that we have at night, or the daydreams that we wind up in, will not be as distorted, because our karma is about to finish. Our karma is about to end. Our earthly karma is about to end. And that's why that 2012 is another significant period for that. So all our earthly karma, meaning that of whether good, bad, or indifferent, either it's good or bad, because there is good karma, and people that are blessed are people with good karma, and people with bad karma are people that are working through the mistakes of their past or even their present. So if that's real, and it's still a hypothesis, we're dealing with the unknown here. But if we accept that, then we're in for the time of our lives in the next few years, and we have to realize that. And the significance of this passage is that the ray of Christ is just as scientific as the ray of the sun. So, in other words, that within us, that ray of hope, that ray of intuition, that ray of enlightenment, if you will, that comes forth in our lives consistently, really, on a regular basis. We often see things and feel things and do things that we're not sure exactly what or where that thought came from or why, but it managed to solve all a problem, or it managed to make us happy, or it managed to create moments in our lives that were memorable, and they came through us through seemingly unknown place. But it's that Christ within us that's ripe and readying itself to emerge that brings that about. And once we understand that as Christ, in the Christian sense, stated that we could be as he. He was the way. He was the light and the way. Because he was showing us that we could be like him. And at the same thing, Jesus wasn't, well, I guess the word Christ, Christos, was the body of Christ, but the ray of Christ is the inner light that we have, and that he had, and that all of us have. And but we just must learn. We must learn to make it stronger. Must learn to make it the optimal part of our focus in our lives, is to create that the ability to rid ourselves of our egos, if you will, subject ourselves to the best within us, which is connected to the divine. And then if we do that, then we will take on the cloak of divinity, if you will, and ascend to an enlightened state, which is the Christhood, which is what we want to do, which is our ultimate goal. So it's saying one must cautiously consider even the so-called nightmares, because there's meaning. Their meaning may be significant as well. So know that we live 8 hours a day in a subconscious state, or in an unconscious state, and where all the world sorts things out. And and there are many legends and many religions that believe in the Akashic Record. And some state that the sleeping hours, the hours that you sleep, are hours that we are like computers, where we are downloading information of our day and into the Akashic Record. And by doing so, we're clearing ourselves for the next day. You know, it's kind of like just downloading your files into an external file and clearing your memory, and then going back to the next day. So let me go on to the next one and the next paragraph. And again, we're on part 8 of the Illumination, and paragraph 2. And it says, What I say now is very important. The canon, by thy God, is the higher, and this canon is the basis of the new world. Formerly one said, and my spirit rejoiced in God my Savior. Now you can say, and my spirit rejoiced in God, thy Savior. And solemnly do I say that therein is salvation. Long live thy God. So you will say to everyone, in exchanging gods, you will walk to the one. There where one might otherwise sink, one can tread softly, if without negation. There where one could suffocate, one can pass by pronouncing thy God. There where matter is revered, one can pass only by elevating the earthly matter into the cosmos. Essentially, one should not have any attachment to earth. Why is there a legend about the descent of Christ into hell? Now we're talking about the other Christ. We're talking about Jesus Christ. But you notice he states, they state the Christ. They don't say Jesus here. They say the Christ. The teacher addressed the lower strata of the astral world, saying, why, by cherishing earthly thoughts, bind oneself eternally to earth? And many revolted in spirit and rose higher. And of course, they stated the legend of Christ. He went into, it was 3 days that he was supposedly dead and then he rose, that was he actually had descended into hell, or what at that time pagans believed was Hades, right? And he asked them, why by cherishing earthly thoughts bind oneself eternally to earth? Many revolted in spirit and rose higher. So by his words, going down into hell, people realized that, I mean, those spirits realized that they had chained themselves there. They were there, just like we're here, chaining ourselves to the idea of a third-dimensional existence, when in reality we are a fourth-dimensional, fifth-dimensional, unlimited-dimensional existence. But we have to understand that first and accept that within ourselves. And he's saying that once you begin on this ascension process to the higher, to illumination and to the higher self, you must look at all the world, everything in the world, not as my savior, but as thy. Okay, not as my world or my God, but as thy God. So in other words, everything around you must ascend to a higher level. Everything around you must become spirit. Everything around you must be linked to God, just as you are, so that you can rise above that as well. So all they're saying is bring your consciousness to a point where everything is of spiritual nature. And scientifically speaking, everything really is, because everything is made up of atoms and everything is made up of molecules, and there really is no connection, no real connection, only what you see and what you imagine. And we covered this last week, where what you project outwards is what becomes real. And so if you project negativity, if you project fear, if you project wants, desires, whatever they may be, whatever you're projecting will become your reality. And what we are is we're simply a projection machine. We're a projector of our own thoughts and our own desires. And through our eyes and our ears, but through our eyes we are able to project before us the things that we desire, so that we can see them, and we can touch them with our senses. Well, we have the five senses. Now, if you wonder why, what we're doing with these, I mean, think of the miracle, simply the miracle of the human body, or the body, or any living creature that can touch, feel, see, smell, taste, and but the only difference between man and all the other creatures is that man has the ability to displace his thought. He has that ability of displacement, where he can look ahead, he can look behind, he can visualize all around him. But the thing that he has the hardest thing to do, that he seems most difficult to do, is comprehend the present, that he's actually in the present. And in 2012, when the end of time exists as we know it, time and space, is when most of the human race will understand that everything that they ever cling to, everything that they ever thought was of value or was of worth or was of was worth anything, you know, or was reality, wasn't. We could manifest that at any time. We were just keeping those memories alive, keeping those memories within us, therefore keeping those places alive within us. Like, for instance, how often have people gone back to their hometowns or something after many, many years of leaving, and look around and not recognize the place, or recognize the place perfectly, because it, just the way, like, it hadn't changed since you were a child. That homestead is the same as it was, looks the same. Well, that's because your memories have been so strong. But what happens is that once you forget these things and once these memories fade, so do those other things fade. They don't necessarily be there. They're not there. Or they might transform into somebody else's vision and change. The White House might become a Red House now. The big bay window may be boarded up. Maybe a picture window. Maybe a door. Things have changed, and people's visions and imaginations have changed with them. So what you might have recognized and hadn't thought of for many years has changed, might have changed, but it depends on how strong you held that image in your mind, and how many times you went back to that image and how many times you insisted on keeping that image in your mind. So everything around you and everything that you own and everything you see, feel, touch, and hear are things that you continually insist upon keeping with you. There is a frame of reference, or as a pleasant memory, or as a warning, or as something. But once we rise, once we ascend to that higher level, into that illumination, that enlightenment, what happens is we become, these things become irrelevant to us. They become almost nonsensical to carry these things around with us. I can recall so many times that, you know, things that I've written down, or written, or essays I've written, or music I've written, or things that I've learned over time and made copious notes on, and you know if anybody who's been in school know what it's like to take notes from a lecture or whatever. You know, in the minute it seems so incredibly important, but a year later you don't remember what the hell it was. And if you don't have, if you haven't kept the notes, you barely remember what was said at the time. But if you've kept those notes and wanted to remember them, then you could, or made a audio copy or a video copy of a lecture or of something that you wanted to remember, then that vision is with you whenever you want it, and you can replay it, or you keep it in your mind's eye, the way that you remembered it, or in your audio memory, the way that you heard it. So and you keep that memory. But of course, what happens is over time, even the most efficient memory will often forget certain parts of something and impose something else in its place. Like, for instance, many years ago, I had a book that was called The Promise, and it was by an author named Neville, and he was a metaphysician and a brilliant writer. But The Promise simply was this, that whatever, that if you, and he had, and he was able to train you to do this, and it was an amazing book, and I tried it, I practiced his methods several times, and they worked, and they still work to this day, when I put my mind to it. But like everything else, you know, I gave the book to a good friend of mine, and I never got it back, and I think he misplaced it, and so that book is gone forever. It was an out-of-print copy. But the premise of that was that you could visualize, if you visualized something for a period of time and kept it in your mind's eye as of your desire, whatever that desire may be, and within a matter of days, weeks, hours perhaps, or within a matter of months, these things will materialize. They'll come together. They'll be there for you. And he went on in his book about many, many different people that received these, that listened to his lectures and went and did these things and had tremendous results, and letters they wrote back to him that he included in his book. So this is very, very, very old and very well-used teaching, because they, you know, many people use it continually. We use it every day. We're just not conscious that we're doing it. If you consciously make that make it happen, then you'll find that you these things that you desire most will appear in your life. You know, they do, because your focus upon them draw the through the law of attraction keeps, you know, brings these things to you. And in a way, that's negative and positive. And, you know, people who continually think in negative terms or harmful or violent terms manifest that in their lives. And those, they do the same thing the opposite way. Those who manifest, those who think in a positive way constantly are, in effect, living within a state of enlightenment. And I'm going to go on with this with two. Section 4, section 8, paragraph 2. Solemnly do I say that therein is salvation. Long live thy God. So you will say to everyone and exchange gods, you will walk to the one. Everyone's walking to the one God. Everything is leading to the one pure essence of God. And there, where one might otherwise sink, one can tread softly. So, as we focus on the oneness of being, our bodies and our lives become lightened, and we can tread softly, where before we might sink, now we walk on water, just as the Christ walked on water, because he realized, he understood that his body was essentially a hologram. And he could project and himself into anything he wanted to be, whether it be life, death, or in between. And there were one who could suffocate one can pass. There, where one could suffocate, one can pass by pronouncing thy God. There, where matter is revered, one can pass only by elevating the earthly matter to the cosmos. Essentially, one should not have an attachment to earth. Why is there a legend about the descent of Christ into hell? Well, the teaching addressed the lower strata of astral world, saying, why, by cherishing earthly thoughts, buying oneself eternally to God, to earth. And many revolted in spirit and rose higher. Thus find the God of each one and exalt him. One can understand it in mind, but it is more important that it be accepted in the smile of the spirit. When the most difficult becomes easy, like the flight of birds, then the stone themselves unite unto a dome. And the Christ and Christ the Mason will appear to each one. And that Christ again is you. It's the perfect you. And once you rise beyond this level of earthly existence in your mind, and you can see beyond it, you can see into the ethereal plane, you can see into heaven, you can see into the clouds, you can see beyond your existing reality and rise to a different reality. Then, like he says, the dome, like the like flight of birds, then the stones themselves unite unto the dome, in Christ the Mason will appear to each one. And Christ is the Mason who builds the dome, builds the walls, builds the towers to climb on. And you're the Mason. You're the one. You're the one who builds your walls. You're the one who keeps you imprisoned. You're the one who builds your mansions. You're the one who builds everything through your projection. And through that projection of your own imagination, your own idea, your own focus on your own vision, okay, and will appear to each one. Christ the Mason will appear to each one. It's like, here I am. You know, here I am. I built this. I'm the Christ. I am the Christ head. I finally reached that level of understanding where I can create anything within my mind, anything I wish to. And that, my friends, is co-creation. That is where many will be by the year 2012, at that state of heightened consciousness, of illumination, where we will fully understand that we create everything in our lives. And we are co-creators with our Creator, with the person who created us. We didn't create ourselves. We were created. But we create everything else that we desire. And Joe can create what he likes, and Elizabeth can create what she wants, and I can create what I want, and everybody creates something different out of their own minds. And everything's amazing, and everything's to be appreciated. Or not, depending on what they manifest in their mind. It could be dark, horrid desires. It could be heart, could be pain, could be suffering, could be whatever it may be. We don't want any of that. We can't appreciate that. But what we can do is turn to those people and say, look at what we've created, something greater, something higher, something better, something more incredible than you'd ever imagine, and aspire to that. And they do, and they will, because they see the joy and happiness in those who create those marvelous things. Now, on the third stanza, it says, synthesis of spirituality is the rarest gift. It alone kindles the light of the world. Nothing can be compared to the light of the world. The light burns, but its ray is being sought. So that spirituality is the fire. That positive, or possibly negative, but nevertheless, the spirituality, the creation of the spirit, that created the synthesis of spirituality, the creation of spirituality, the higher consciousness, the divine consciousness that we're seeking, is the rarest gift. It alone kindles the light of the world. It's that advancement. It's that need to continue expanding your spiritual self, in expanding your consciousness to become enveloped, or to envelope all the light, all the goodness, all the wonders of the universe. And it alone kindles the light of the world. And that desire that you have to uplift yourself spreads and kindles the light of the world. And nothing can be compared to the light of the world. The light burns, but its ray is being sought. Now, number four, it says, do not make enemies. This is an enjoinment to all. Know your enemies, beware of them, stop their actions, but bear no malice. And if the enemy comes of his own accord under your roof, give him warmth, because large is your roof, and the newcomer shall not take your place. But if it is difficult to overcome a deep feeling, and cover it with a smile of light. I see, this is where I have to, if I look at it metaphorically, possibly I can accept that statement. But if I don't, I look at it realistically from a third dimensional reality that I insist in, that we all exist in, I have to look at that and say, no, I have too many red flags when I read that. I can't invite my enemies in. I don't trust them. I don't trust them into my heart. I don't trust them into my life. I know the damage they can do, and I know the evil that they represent. So I can't do that. But what they're saying is, do it, because you're bigger than they are, and you know, as large as your roof, and the newcomer shall not take your place. Possibly because if you invite your enemies, They don't even know. They don't really know who you are. If they do, they might have misconceptions of who you are, or what you have, or you know, what your world is. But if it's difficult to overcome a deep feeling, cover it with a smile of light. Like I said, if it's difficult to not like the person, then smile. Well, maybe. That's all well and good. Unless the guy takes out a gun and shoots you, then the smile doesn't do any good. Unless you're just a smiling dead person. But the sentiment of all fictitious accounts is verily incommensurate with the plan of the Lord's. For if we put upon a scale the works in their original form and the fictions devised through the exertions of hatred, the latter will be the weightier. In the name of co-measurement, one must find a right place for people. Otherwise, we might as well speak with the same intonation about the center of the planet and the ink spot. A piece of music played in one tonality evokes distaste. Therefore, we bid you to understand the practicality of co-measurement. But if you notice a long conversation about an empty shell, arrest the attention of the speaker upon the impracticality of not. With many people, this discipline is indispensable. Do not be afraid if you be called insane, for the path is open to you. Do not forget to praise the enemies. Let us conclude about the enemies. About the non-commensurate of dates. Along with the ocean waves, small streamlets of events are given. Can one confuse a streamlet with an ocean? But upon earth, one always hurries to confuse the personal with the worldwide. As the hand feels the thickness of fabric, so must the spirit discriminate the depth of the events. Do not be fascinated by the seemingly magnitude of events, because among the basic nodes there may be motley phantoms, and the streamlets are temporarily change their beds. An incidental moment or silence or indisposition should not be attributed to the wave. Thus, if the traveler stops for rest on his way, this does not mean that he has deviated from his path. And the manifestation of nodal wave rises instantaneously, but before each wave the boat hesitates. The more sensitive boat will shudder the stronger, because the dust of the explosion already fills the atmosphere. Therefore, the co-measurement of the dates and events must not be forgotten. Acceleration of the current can especially affect the organism. The complexity of events sometimes even seems to sever the thread, but this is only temporary, while the organisms digest a double portion of the world's course. The complexity of physical conditions can augment the physical sensations, and one should not then overtire oneself as the waves of the ocean augur an approaching change. Now, I wanted to mention that this particular book was written in 1925. That was the advent of radio. I think they just got radio and began. But television, computer technology, everything we take for granted today wasn't even thought of yet. Possibly in the minds of H.G. Wells, but in nobody else's mind. And these thoughts that he had, I'd take a figure like H.G. Wells, who wrote so many of these of the science fiction tales back in those days, much earlier than that, actually, in the 1800s, late 1800s, I believe. Through the early 1900s. He wrote about these fantastic voyages of Captain Nemo and all of these different technologies and space aliens, and oh my God, all kinds of things that captured the imagination of man, of his people of his time, and much later, and still captures the imagination of many. And these things, so much so that his thoughts, those thoughts of that writer, for instance, were thoughts that he projected, thoughts that he had, ideas that he had that came from, you know, his imagination. He thought about it. And he thought about, well, how cool this would be, how really great these things would be if they could happen. And he wrote about it, and they were published, and they went out, and people started reading, and they grabbed onto that idea. And as the idea grew, it became accepted, basically in consciousness as a conception or as an idea. But it was such a pregnant idea that it was able to bring about a reality that we have today, the technology we have today, the submarines, the aircraft, the machines of war, machines of industry, machines of domestic help and aid. It's just all of these incredible things, architecture and everything. So you can't dilute the effect of your own dream, your imagination, and your own and the power that it has to change the course of not only your destiny, but that of the world. How one thought, let's go back to a Christ or a Muhammad or let's go back to a Jesus or a Muhammad, who were both Christ in their own selves. They were both Christ-like in themselves. They were men of God and high, a high spiritual achievement, high spiritual enlightenment. If you take these people as an example, and you look at them, and you say, and you listen to their enlightened words and their remarkable prophecies and wisdom and humanity that they shared with their disciples and with all who asked for their help or their words, they essentially impregnated an entire generation of prophets. All right, because that generation, that of people who were there at the time, listening and working and believing in the prophets, were conceived these ideas from these men and these prophets, and took it upon themselves. And exploded with illumination, exploded with excitement, exploded with zealous religious fanaticism, just an explosion of it. And that was what the early Christians did. That's what the early Muslims did. And they conquered entire generations through words and idea rather than through arms and through, you know, they destroyed an entire the Roman Empire simply through an idea. They destroyed the Ottoman Empire. They destroyed the so many. I mean, just these the power of the mind and the power of the illuminated mind knows no limit. Just knows no limit. And if it's because once you are illuminated, once you have accepted that you can be the Christ, you can be God-like, you can achieve that that's achievable in your life. It's achievable in your many lives. It's achievable. And it's what you're destined to be. Then whatever that is takes on this incredible magnet, if you will. You act as a magnet. You become a magnet. And you attract to yourself all that you need and all that is needed to fulfill the mission that you have given yourself to fulfill. Just as Christ had his mission, or Muhammad had his mission, or Buddha had a mission, or Krishna, every enlightened being on earth, human being, has had a mission to accomplish that they've given either themselves or has been given to them, like the divine conception, where Gabriel came to Mary and said, you're going to have a child. So all of a sudden, boom, she had a child. But or that the same Gabriel, the same angel, went to Muhammad when he was in a cave. He was meditating in a cave, and Gabriel came to him and grabbed him and shook him by his shoulders and shook him and called him a fool and called him, hey, he yelled at him, and it shook Muhammad out of his trance, and he became and he saw that Gabriel, heard Gabriel, and was given the Book of Islam, basically the spark of Islam, the mission. He was assigned the mission to be their prophet, and he went out and did so, and created a world religion and a first class civilization. So I guess what I'm trying to say here in this is that what these words are, once you become illumined or illuminated, then, and you get that way through the steady path that you're walking toward it, toward your daily lives, toward every day expanding your thought process to a higher level, either by hearing something or listening to something or thinking about something that you can focus on that will broaden your scope of understanding and bring you to a higher level of consciousness or awareness, which is really the same thing. And we go on. And it says in number 6, it says, acceleration as well as retardation proceeds in waves. So in other words, you got to expect that you are like a wave, like you're like the ocean in waves being blown to the sea, but every wave accelerates rapidly, and then once it hits the sea, once it hits the shore, it comes back, right? Or it goes into a swell, it goes into a deep swell, and before it becomes a crest. And that's explaining that. Proceeds in waves, and we have to see ourselves and our spirits as following the waves, okay, a wave of ascension. And therefore, when perceiving a wave of acceleration, one must succeed in casting into it as many seeds as possible. So when we see that, obviously, when we see that wave, when we perceive a wave of acceleration, when we see it in ourselves, when we see ourselves rapidly, suddenly becoming aware of things that we weren't, again, grabbing knowledge that we didn't know, and good luck or fortune or whatever it may be, is accelerating in our favor, then we have to succeed in casting into it as many seeds as possible, so we can So when it comes, we have to plant those seeds of knowledge, plant those seeds of kindness, plant those seeds of caring, plant those seeds of goodness, of humanity, plant the knowledge and the wisdom and the and whatever else there is that's good to into the seeds, into the water, into the land, into the source, if you will. And the laws of appearance of teachers coincide with the plan of the whole culture. Karma rolls up like a scroll, and signs of the departing earthly powers begin to flash out. For those who know the future, it is hard to observe these departing flickers. Like yesterday stands tomorrow, and the step is measured not in feet, but in 3 years period. 3 year periods. That's interesting. Thus is obtained the stride of giants, to whom it is not frightening to step over whole centuries. Thus does the psychology of the spirit reach the earth. For earthly shells, each century is like a menace, but the period of the spirit bestows wings of truth. To those striding, the span of 3 years is sometimes seems that they do not live. A special propelled aerostat sometimes seems to be motionless because it is apparent inertia does not correspond to the surroundings. Now, the interesting thing about this, the interesting thing about this is that we're now in 2009. Okay, and 2009 to 2012 is only 3 years, so we are at this moment in a 3 year wave, if you will, a 3 year period. That is abstained, thus is abstained the stride of giants. So, to whom it is not frightening to step over whole centuries. So, we have to think now that the prophecies have stated that in 2012, something, we're not sure what, but something major will happen and change the course of human destiny, right? We are in that accelerated portion of it now. The next 3 years, my God, look what happened in the last 3 years. Look how fast it went. Think of what you were doing 3 years ago, and think of what you're doing today, and how fast those 3 years went. You could almost remember everything you did then. Well, it's the same now. Think now of what 3 years from now will be like. Put your mind in that focus and say, in 3 years' time, it's going to be the most incredible year in the world has ever seen. 3 years from now, 2012, that will be the end of all time and space as we know it. We will ascend to the fourth dimension, and we will be in dreamland for the rest of our lives. We will not be dead. We will be alive, more alive than we've ever been, and more alive than anyone in any time has ever been, because we will be the generation that ascends to the fourth dimension. We will be at the crest of the wave of ascension. And that's what we are, and that's why we have to understand that that is what that rolling wave is. And like this work said, it takes 3 years. The step is measured not in feet, but in three-year periods. So every 3 years, there's a major cycle. There's a major swing, a major cycle, is what they're explaining. And be on the crest. Be aware of it, but be on the crest to plant your seeds and plant as many seeds as you can to so that you flourish. And that, you know, within that, after that three-year period, everything you ever desired will come true, will be there for you. And that is what it's saying. And thus is obtained the strides of giants. For early shells like centuries, for earthly shells, each century is like a menace. But the bridge of the spirit bestows wings on truth. So the spirit bestows wings of truth. To those overstriding the span of 3 years, it sometimes seems that they do not live. Let me repeat that again. To those overstriding the span of 3 years, it sometimes seems that they do not live. So a lot of people plan for 5 years ahead. Say, I'm going to do this in 5 years. All right, this is all going to happen. And it's like for everything that you've done for 5 years doesn't exist. Never existed. That it's that fifth year that exists. Well, they're saying that do it in 3. Right? It's the same thing. You don't have to do it in 5 or 100 or 500. You can have the same time, but right now you're in the time when you can do it in 3 years or 1 year, or you can do it tomorrow. But it comes, for some reason, cosmically, the numbers work in 3s. And to those overstriding the span of 3 years, it sometimes seems that they do not live. And specially propelled astro-aerostat sometimes seems to be motionless because its apparent inertia does not correspond to the surroundings. So in other words, you're projecting 5 years, 10 years ahead, okay, and your focus is so planted on those years ahead that what you're seeing isn't corresponding with what's around you, because what's around you hasn't reached that level yet. And I got kind of carried away here, and I apologize because I realized that the show is no longer streaming. However, I want to continue this a little bit because I haven't quite finished my thought. And you can catch it in the archives. Number 8, he says, he who carries the knowledge of the future can walk boldly even upon shaky stones. He who carries the knowledge of the future can walk boldly even upon shaky stones. Success is then when the consummation is beautiful. Success is then when one can set forth upon a new journey. The wish is already a part of the fulfillment. Courageously advance to the light. The parting is the forerunner of the meeting. And Saint Sergius used to say, you must depart, otherwise you cannot meet again. And I wish to recall the cult of the high priestesses. There was one group which was brought into an exalted state by means of chemical preparations, another by way of magnetic currents, and there were also low grades of conjurations and mechanical whirlings. Then began the inward concentration on the threshold of sleep, or the concentrations upon a brilliant light, a brilliant object. The knowledge which came from within, without any apparent conditions, was considered the highest. So in other words, if they weren't prepared for this and they still received knowledge, then that was the highest form of knowledge. The path of the world evolution proceeding under your eyes requires different conditions, and the time is coming when psychic forces must be strongly restricted for the sake of the spirit. For the last decade, the lower strata of nature have taken possession of the lower psychic manifestations to such an extent that a danger to evolution is arising. You can progress not by the way of the lower strata of phantoms and encumbrances, but through cooperation with the higher planes. Now, about the circles of receptivity. The circles of keen sight proceed centrifugally, and those of receptivity proceed centripetally. In other words, centrifugal and centripetally. From symbols and dim outlines, they advance spirally to sharp fact, to clear call, clear audience, clairvoyance, clear understanding, clear achievement, clear knowledge. One must understand that into the category of the call, the fact does not enter. Because in this category, a precise action can be misunderstood and will only increase the danger. I do not wish to imply anything demeaning about those who need the call, but a fact in their hands would be like a loaded gun given to one ignorant in handling weapons. Of course, the boundary of the call is quite relative, but when one can pass over to the circle of understanding, we greatly rejoice. Each circle is like a caravan. Of course, a whole caravan carries more than a single horse, yet on the other hand, a single horse can delay the whole movement. Shyness or misstep can upset the march. Therefore, the concept of achievement and clear achievement differ very distinctly. It is possible to check the flash of the achievement, but not the fire of clear achievement. The flame of clear achievement may flicker from the effect of cosmic vortices, but it cannot be removed from the head. You will understand why a symbol as an identifying sign is necessary up to a certain degree. Later on, it becomes unbearable and begins to fall off like a husk. Like the music of the spheres, the all-existing resounds along the ways of boundlessness and non-reoccurrence. As a bird flutters and then flies, so does a word gush from our furnace, and afterward, it can only be confirmed. Occultly, the first moment is more important than a repetition. When one can catch the boiling of the furnace, it glows more powerfully than a command. I have already told you that the mother of the world conceals her name. I have already told you how the mother of the world veils her face. I have already made mention about the mother of Buddha and Christ. Indeed, it is time to point out that the mother of both lords is not a symbol, but a great manifestation of the feminine origin, in which is revealed the spiritual mother of Christ and Buddha. She it was who taught and ordained them for achievement. From time immemorial, the mother of the world is sent forth to achievement. In the history of humanity, her hand traces an unbearable thread, an unbreakable thread. On Sinai, her voice rang out. She assumed the image of Kali. She was at the basis of the cult of Isis and Ishtar. After Atlantis, when a blow was inflicted upon the cult of the spirit, the mother of the world began to weave her new thread, which will now begin to radiate. After Atlantis, the mother of the world veiled her face and forbade the pronouncement of her name until the hour of the constellation should strike. She has manifested herself only partly. Never has she manifested herself on a planetary scale. One may cite many examples when even high magi left behind them unexpected consequences in a desire to find support in the lower strata of matter. Such perversion be termed the channel of the intellect and can arrest for a long time the communion with other worlds. Now people mechanically search for the already spiritually predestined. The teaching of the future epoch will be reunion of the spirit and intellect. The course of the planets permits the hastening of the communion between the worlds, and the development of the human spirit will proceed along new ways, and the luminaries permit the acceleration of the course of humanity. And there we are. And that's where I'll end tonight's show, because that's exactly where we were headed. And and within the next 3 years, according to prophecy, 2012. So, thank you, and I will end tonight's show, and I want to invite you to join us tomorrow night when we speak with George Dixon regarding these issues of the Mayan calendar, 2012 prophecy, zero point merge, the blue star, and maybe it will clarify our discussed a little more tonight. So thank you and have a pleasant evening.